the Fly in DC podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, and featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, an inside lacrosse analyst, and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, oh, how the season flies by. Somehow, it's championship weekend, and we're here to get you ready. We'll talk about host Virginia, the coaching situation, and get Tewaratan quality Charlottesville restaurant recommendations from longtime listener and best-selling author Rich Chismar. And you will preview the semifinal games with our friend of the pod and CBS broadcast star, Evan Washburn. Got a championship weekend worthy show coming up. So Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, are your travel plans all in place for your trip to Charlottesville this weekend?
They are. And I'm glad I can talk to you this morning because the last couple days have been rough. I've been really under the weather with a bad cold or virus, and I worry about my voice. But thank God for pharmaceuticals. Thank God for hot tea. Thank God for my wife. And I'm ready to go. We're recording on Thursday, so I'll get down to Charlottesville tonight. Tomorrow, Friday, media day. And then Saturday, we kick off with the semifinals. Going down with a little bit of a trepidation, if you will. The North Carolina Tar Heels got knocked out last weekend by Syracuse. And, you know, I've been covering the championship weekend, whether it's for ESPN, being live for halftime or post game, and then more so with the radio with Westwood One, which was where I'll be again this weekend with Cooper Boardman and Evan Washburn. But my kids were a big part of that and would come and to the events and that kind of thing. So having the possibility of my son being in the mix was really a hope for our family, but it didn't work out that way. And you got to be a professional though, as you know. Got to go down, got to do the job, cover the games, and we'll see who walks out on Monday with the gold.
Yeah, that's what everyone's dreaming of all year, and for some people their whole career. Dixie, are you doing just the Division I games, or are you doing all five games?
You know, I'm doing just D1. Last year, I didn't do D2, D3 for the first time in a while. I just need that Sunday to recalibrate, and especially this year now that, you know, my voice is just coming back a little bit. I need it for Sunday and Monday. So I'll be enjoying the town of Charlottesville on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, you seem to enjoy your trip to Hempstead a little bit too, didn't you?
You know what? Despite the result, it was great. I got a lot of friends up on Long Island. And our guy, Brian Pacola, arranged a dinner the night before. So I knew it was going to be me, Brian, and Eric Chick, whose son, EV, plays for Johns Hopkins. But Pick surprised us with Carmen Cavallo and Todd Cavallaro coming into town. So that was great. And Scott Malika joined us as well, his son Anthony. And Scott still lives on the island in Massapequa. But his son Anthony broke the 100 goal career goal mark this year for Hofstra. So it was great to see Scott. Eric's wife, Melissa, my wife, Erica, joined us as well as my oldest son, Matt. He's met these guys before, but it was when he was younger. So being able to have him spend time with them and as an adult was awesome. So we had a great dinner on Friday. Then we swung by the Hopkins tailgate on Saturday, saw a lot of great folks, John DiTomaso, Rich Wilkins, Greg Matthews, some other guys, Steve Eddy was there. Yeah, just a bunch of people that, you know, and it was a lively, vibrant atmosphere. That was great. It was cool. Rough outcomes, but still a fantastic weekend. Other than the fact that the HVAC in our hotel room didn't work, so it was steaming hot.
I think that's why you got sick.
Yeah, probably.
So I thank you for sharing the photos from your dinner with those guys who I know all of them. And I can only imagine how much you laughed all during dinner. I mean, that is a cast of characters that are just Hopkins legends.
And not just that, but my roommate from college, Steve McCardle, lives in Garden City. So he came over to the Carolina tailgate with his younger son, Tyler. So I was able to see Steve as well and hang out with him. And then they came to the game briefly. They had Stevie Mac had dinner reservations at the country club. So he was dining with the Underhills that night. Yeah.
Question for you. Why did you have dinner at Vincent's Clam Shack? Why didn't you go there?
I did not. Pick lives in Rockville Center, and he is very fond of Dario's is the name of the restaurant. So he made reservations. He set the menu. He did everything. So we went to Dario's in Rockville Center. Did not get to Vincent's Clam Bar.
I'm sure it was fantastic.
It was terrific.
All right. Let's get ahead to this week and bring in our guest. And we're very excited about our guest this week, Richard Chismar. We've been trying to set this up for years, actually.
Long time coming.
Long time.
He's been very elusive.
Richard's a prolific, best-selling and award-winning author, screenwriter, producer, entrepreneur. He's a longtime lacrosse fan, lacrosse dad, and we're so excited to bring him onto the show. Richard, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Sorry it took me so long. For the record, yeah, Noah, my son Noah did not want me on there the first couple times you asked. I think he was terrified of what I may say publicly.
So that's really interesting, because when I would talk about the subject with Noah, he's like, yeah, I don't think my dad's comfortable coming on with me playing. So I love how each side points the finger at the other.
Yes.
So for some background, Noah Chismar, Richard's son, and Mark's sons played together for the Crabs. That's how they got to know each other. And then Noah went on to play at the University of Virginia, where he was All-America caliber, short stick defensive midfielder, team captain, and just a very well-respected player for his hustle, his grit, his tenacity, and his skill. And Richard is on, and we're excited to talk to him about a lot of things, but he's a Charlottesville expert. This is a man who's been traveling there for several years. We know a lot of fans are heading down to Charlottesville this weekend, a lot of listeners. He can give us some travel tips, getting around campus, but also restaurant recommendations, which is probably the most important thing that all of our listeners want to hear. So thank you. You bring so much to the table, Rich.
Oh, my pleasure. And yeah, food is one of the few things that I'm an expert on. One of the reasons I love your podcast so much is at some point you always, you know, get to, you know, the conversation turns to pop culture and food. And we've listened to you every Friday for 4 years on our way to, whether it was Charlottesville or Carolina or, you know, Syracuse. We rarely flew. We always drove. And yeah, so we would have a string of podcasts, and you guys were always my favorite. Sorry, Quint, you were like second, close though. So yeah, anyway, food is the key to my heart. Any social gathering I'm invited to, they always mention the menu with hopes of, you know, we made those meatballs you like so much, Rich, or that kind of thing. So yeah.
That's the ultimate compliment. I've heard some other people say that they listen to us when they drive to the game, and there's nothing better that we could hear. So thank you for that. But let's get to the elephant in the room. There's some other news coming out of Charlottesville this week that Lars Tiffany's contract was not renewed. He's been there for 10 years. He is the reigning ACC champs, head coach of the Virginia Cavaliers. He's won 2 national championships, been to the Final Four 4 different times, and won 3 ACC championships. And they will have a new head coach in Charlottesville next year. Dixie, let's get your thoughts on this first, and then we can bring Rich in to get his take on it.
Yeah, I think with lacrosse social media, coaches are fired multiple times throughout a season. And I think Lars Tiffany at Virginia and Peter Milliman at Johns Hopkins were the two that, you know, okay, oh God, I remember after Virginia lost to Towson, and I had that game with Paul Carcaterra, and the Tigers just ran him off their home field. They're like, Lars is done. Last year of the contract, he's done. I think halftime of the Virginia game, Peter Milliman was going to get fired. And, you know, they were down by 6-7 goals. And Peter Milliman in his last year of his contract. Well, you know, look, the Blue Jays go to the Big Ten championship game, go to the NCAA quarterfinals. Safe to say, I think Peter Milliman will be back. Lars Tiffany, they were able to turn things around. After they lost to Maryland, which was a game they lost prior, no, it was after Towson. He said that turned our season around. And people were like, that sounds crazy, a loss turning a season around. And sure enough, Virginia pulls it together, wins the ACC championship, gets the number 5 seed in the NCAA tournament, and unfortunately lost on home soil to Georgetown. But this is where we are with college lacrosse these days. It's, you know, you have alumni presence, you have a parents presence, you have a social media presence. But I think over top of all that is a financial presence. And I think ultimately that may have done Lars Tiffany in. What I had heard was, you know, alumni relationships weren't solid and the locker room was a little divided. The coaching staff wasn't aligned. Those are all, you know, you talk to 10 different people, you're going to get 5 different opinions. So ultimately, you read his body of work, very impressive, has had a couple of quote unquote down years, last year being the most down where they didn't make the NCAA tournament. You know, but this year it looked like it was a turnaround and the cupboard is still pretty full in Charlottesville. So I think, you know, it is what it is at the end of the day. I have no ties to Virginia. I like Lars. You know, Lars is a coach that was very candid with the media, myself included, would be straight up, wouldn't hide things, wore his heart on his sleeve. But I didn't play for him, and my kids never played for him, and I don't have an insider in the program, if you will. So ultimately, it's about wins and losses. It's about success, and here today, gone tomorrow. And, you know, I think that coaches all around shaking their boots a little bit. I mean, look at Fairfield with their dismissal of Andrew Baxter. I mean, they had their best season in 2025 in a decade, and then they had high hopes for this year. They falter and he's out at Fairfield. So it's not just the big boys that this happens with. It's also your, you know, quote unquote mid majors. So anyhow, love Lars as a person. He was always great to me and my crews on TV. And there's a lot of people that are pretty upset about this dismissal. And then there's a lot of people who are, you know, who are really excited.
So Rich, from your standpoint, I think you fall into the camp that we are, that I have met Lars, we've worked together on some projects long ago, but I have a lot of respect for him. He's taken Brown to the Final Four, he's taken UVA to the Final Four several times. But your perspective and experience with him is unique. Your son, Noah, walk on, given a chance to play at Virginia, excelled, became a key part of the team, and rises to team captain. Give us some of your experience with the UVA program over the last 5-6 years.
Yeah, I mean, my experience has been overwhelmingly positive. Again, easy to say because of all those reasons you just listed. But, you know, first and foremost, I come in as just a parent, you know, where, you know, you're looking at a situation of where your kid is going to be for the next 4 years. How is he going to be taken care of? You know, what kind of environment is he going to be entered into? You know, Lars has been nothing but, you know, straight up with us. Ton of respect for him. You know, Noah was committed to another program, got into Virginia because of a scholarship thing where he had to apply to be eligible. Got in on his own and decided to roll the dice and go there. He decided, you know, I want a degree from UVA, so I'll take a chance. You know, Lars has been really honest in the press. There's several interviews and articles where he's kind of laughingly saying, you know, we didn't want Noah. We had to be talked into it by other coaches and players. You know, Alex Rode bugged him, I think, every day for months until they finally gave him a shot. But, you know, when he said he was going to give him a shot, you know, he meant every word. You know, Noah kind of came in and just happy to be there. And by the time fall ball ended, he was, you know, pretty high up on the depth chart and ended up you know, he ended up playing every quarter of every game for 4 years, except for two games where they made him sit out because he had a separated shoulder. And even then they told him, no, you cannot dress because we know you'll try to sneak in. Noah has been, you know, very vocal, saying it's the best decision of his life. That's what the staff used to say. Yeah, he comes in like once a week. Best decision I've ever made. His experience, again, from every player, I think every parent has a different experience. Ours has been pretty wonderful. From that first day at Klockner, kind of, you know, my wife, Kara, and I looking at each other going, how the heck did we get here? To, you know, the ups and downs, the two Final Fours, the ACC regular season championship back when we didn't have the tournament, to last year, which was a down year and was a tough year. I hear things like, you know, divided locker room, and I shake my head because I know the guys, saw them every week. I think I'm probably the only parent on a text thread with players. I'm on the text thread with all the D-middies, the honorary position they bestowed upon me. So, you know what? I get to hear things, a lot of things after the fact, not just at tailgates or having dinner when they're kind of on their best behavior. And, you know, these guys love each other. These guys love each other. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, people ask me all the time with the transfer portal and all that stuff. I think it's telling that when the transfer portal, you know, first opened up, there were no UVA players on there. There has never been a big, you know, exodus of players from the program. Charlottesville is a special place, and they'll tell you that. You know, I just talked to Joey Terenzi like a week or two, and he's like, this is the most special place on earth. Players love it there. They love each other. There was never any division in the locker room. Whether it's the high profile guys or whether it's the walk-ons, that's the neat thing. When Noah was a freshman, you know, week one, week two, we're like, who are you hanging out with? Who were you out with last night? His answer was always everybody. But, you know, I slept over at Wirtland. Well, you know, who lives at Wirtland? All the old guys, Petey LaSalle and all those guys, Andrew Dixon. You know, he was a walk-on freshman hanging out with those guys. They go out of their way to make everyone feel part of that family. And I think, you know, a lot of that starts with the coaching staff. So I've never, from Kip to Kerwin to Cassis to Greco to Brian Wilbur, all of them, you know, including Lars, you know, not to ramble, but, you know, everyone knows this. Lars is a different cat. You know, he's a different kind of guy. He communicates differently. I think some players really relate to it. I think some players don't, but they still respect it. What you said about the alumni, I think is true. You know, I have no secrets. I'm the parent who never, and I'm close with a bunch of parents. You know, I will be good friends with a bunch of these parents until the day I die. But I am that parent who sat on the hill for 4 years, every game. I never sat in the parent section. I like to kind of keep to myself. I'm a parent of a D-middy, so I'm a nervous wreck the whole flipping game. And I don't know any secrets, but you hear enough to know that, yeah, I think a lot of the older alumni weren't happy. And I think maybe some of the ones with deeper pockets than others probably put their foot forward. It was a surprise to me. It was a disappointment to me. And I know a ton of other parents and players who feel the same. And I'm sure there's others that don't. So, I mean, bottom line for me is I feel like, you know, I'll always be indebted to Lars. He gave my kid an honest chance. I think there's a lot of coaches who maybe would not have given that honest chance, because here's a kid who was, he was said, you know, we know it was never on our recruiting radar, but that didn't matter. What mattered was who he could put on the field to help the team as a whole. And I respect the heck out of that, especially at a program at the level of UVA.
Very well said.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Richard. And but a reminder that the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Before we get to those Charlottesville tips, I got to talk to you about your career and what you're up to now, what your latest project is. And I also want to ask you, we've talked about your son Noah a bit, but your other son, Billy, you've collaborated with him in some writing projects, and I'd love to get to know a little bit more about that.
Oh yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I have my new book will be out in October. It's the third of a series and hopefully the last one of a series. It's called Killing the Boogeyman, set in Harford County, mainly Bel Air and Edgewood, my hometowns. I'm the main character. It's strange to write about yourself, but that's why I said hopefully the last one, 'cause it's been three books, but I'm a big true crime fan when done well. Way back when, I wrote a book called Chasing the Boogeyman, where I'm the main character, and it's essentially written as a true crime, experience, where everything in the book, is autobiographical, and all my real friends, all my real family members, their real names, everything's true to life except for the killings, fortunately. So it's been a fun experience, but after, like I said, after writing about myself for three books, I'm sick of myself, and time to move on. Collaborating with Billy, my oldest son, he was a goalie at Colby. He was Alex Rhodes' backup at St. Paul's. Played lacrosse his whole life too, and it's probably one of the reasons why Noah was so gritty, because they rarely had a shooting session that didn't end up with Noah crying. 4 years younger brother, but it made him tough. And Billy and I, he's been publishing since he was in high school, short stories, and at some point he decided to follow in my footsteps, which is a tough gig to make a living writing, but quickly found out how good he is. We collaborated on a book called Widow's Point last year that actually made the New York Times bestseller list, and that was just the best experience of my life. So much fun to work with him every day, and to realize that here I am, the father and the veteran, and I'm learning from my son in so many ways throughout the process. So that was cool. And now he has his first solo book coming out from Simon & Schuster this August. It's an apocalyptic novel called Them. And I hope everybody will give it a shot. It's a really good book. He's very different than me. As far as a writer, I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy. Just, you're not going to have to stop and look up too many words in the dictionary when you read my stuff. It's just all about story and narrative. And Billy's much smarter, a little bit more literary. His dog's named JJ after James Joyce, which tells you everything you need to know. My dog's named Cujo. So yeah, it's been a blast, and I'm blessed. I wake up every day feeling grateful because I get to do this and get paid to do it. And not having real office hours or a real job enabled me to go to every single one of Noah's games for 4 years, home and away. And we would all care. Again, my wife and I would kind of look at each other and say, how lucky are we? So yeah.
And
but I appreciate you plugging me.
And Cujo's what, all of 10, 12 pounds?
Yes, yeah. Noah's always wanted a small dog, so we finally caved in. We've always had golden retrievers and big dogs, and we finally caved into Noah back in middle school. And we said, but Billy and I get naming rights. That's how we bartered the deal here. And so we got this little white fluff ball, tiny thing, and we named it Cujo. you remember. I used to bring it to the Crabs games.
And oh, yeah.
Cujo would rifle through everyone's bags looking for snacks.
Well, speaking of crabs, too, you said true to life. I love the fact that it's a female police officer or detective with the name McLaren.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, the non-real people, I always had to get permission, so I had to ask Ryan, and he was very happy to give me permission, because I had used his name as a very bad guy in Widow's Point, actually, in that book, and so I think he was happy to see a little balance.
Widow's Point's been made into a movie, though. Like
Well, the novella, it started as a novella that we wrote when Billy was in college. And it was published, and it did really well, surprised us, because it's really, there's nothing overwhelmingly original about it. It's kind of just like every horror and ghost story chestnut thrown into one stew and mixed up. But it really struck a chord with an audience, and it ended up being a low budget film. Not a very good one. It's the kind you can find on like Tubi for free, which is about what it should be. But we had a blast, and Billy had a cameo in it. And again, how many times do you get to say, your son's in college and you're on a movie set listening to characters speak words that you wrote, and there's Billy on screen. And that was neat. I was fortunate. I've collaborated with Stephen King, so a lot of people say that has to be the highlight of your career. And I'm like, you would think it would be, but I got to do all this stuff with my kid. So nothing can top that.
Nothing can top that. All right. Fans are coming to Charlottesville. Where do you recommend they go eat dinner on Saturday night, Friday night?
Oh, dinner. You know what? It depends. If you want to go, if you want to put on the college shirt and go to a decent place and have some drinks, I'm thinking, please, Italian places like Vivace, steaks is black Cow Chop House. We've been there a bunch of times. Orzo's, Max Wooten, who was a teammate of Noah's, his parents own that restaurant, and we've been there many times and really enjoyed it. Lampo is a not a fancy place. It's, yeah, I think it was an old garage, but amazing pizza. The Terenzis, who are New York natives and know their pizza, I have enjoyed many meals with them, and they know their stuff. That's kind of how I rank my parents, is if they enjoy food as much as I do and they have good opinions. So yeah, they swear on the pizza there, and great meatballs. You don't have to have reservations. Fabio's is a little hole in the wall pizza place. A lot of players would go there for pregame. I know Noah and Truett and Huddy and a bunch of those guys. Joey always went there with them. Griff Schutz used to go there until he had a bad game, and then he refused to go back. Had to go somewhere else. But Fabio's is great cheesesteaks, really good pizza. Noah swears on their chicken parm. Mexican, you know, Guadalajara is my favorite. That's a controversial opinion. My wife does not like it. My older son is not a fan. I've taken many players there, and they at least say to my face that they like it, but I'm always paying the bill, so I don't know what else they're going to say. But yeah, there's so many places. I'm trying to think of some of the other steak places we've been to. The local I really like. There's a place called 10 for sushi. Bibadero is like upscale Mexican. That's more the parents like that than Guadalajara, but I'm a purist, so give me that. Where else? Maya, I think it's called, is really good southern food. And, you know, you can go on. The one place I always tell people to go to is the rooftop bar at the drafts. The graduate. Nice view of downtown Charlotte. And it's a good place to wind down and have a few drinks. We've celebrated up there, and we've kind of, drank our sorrows away up there after a few games, too. But that's always a good spot. And then there's a ton of wineries. I'm not the winery crowd. So that's I always made excuses. I can't make it. I got to work. That's the nice thing about being a writer. You always have work to do.
this is a fantastic list. If what about like a breakfast brunch kind of spot if people are hanging around on Sunday or Monday morning?
Yeah, everyone always talks about Bodo's, bagels. I think a lot of the players like a place called Pico Wrap. I love a place called Sam's Kitchen. It's more of like, kind of an old fashioned sit down country's place, not fancy. It's in a little strip mall. It's about 5 or 10 minutes out of town. But I've never had someone who I recommended that place to come back and ask me what the heck, I was talking about. Just good breakfast, good prices. There's a place called the Dairy Market that has 8 or 10 different, eateries. That's right in the downtown, Charlottesville, and you can't beat that place. Whether you want pizza, there's an ice cream place, there's you can get noodles, you can get sushi, I believe, and so I don't want to overlook that because it's a great place to go, and they have outdoor and indoor seating too. So
one place you didn't name is the Spot, but that's for the younger crowd, for the Gus Burgers, right?
Oh yeah. I the younger crowd, there's plenty, go to the corner and there it's unlimited. There's one shop after another, and if Trinity Pub and Boylan Heights are the big, if you don't mind the sticky floors and all that. But that's where the nightlife is. Those are the players' haunts. The Draftsman is another, pub. And then the downtown mall. The downtown mall is beautiful. I mean, tons of restaurants, boutiques, these shops, live music, all that. I think that's probably, I saved that for last just because, it's not my favorite eateries. But it's most of the parents' favorite eaters. Like I said, I'm a Fabio's kind of guy. Give me a cheesesteak on a plastic tray and I'm happy. Or a big bowl of meatballs. I don't like having to get dressed up and
Me neither.
Yeah. So
this is an excellent list.
It's exhaustive.
Exactly. This is no
anything you want, Charlottesville.
So for the listeners, this is no notes. Rich is just like pulling these deep pulls here and fantastic list. If you're ever looking for some extra writing work, you could write for the Visit Central Virginia or something.
Someone needs to put together a booklet for all the the lacrosse destinations, because that was our big thing. Is when we went to Notre Dame, I wanted to know where to eat. I've known Quint for quite a while because my older son Billy trained under him for a year or two. So I was able to text Quint and say, "Hey, where are you going to eat here?" But Quint and I have very different dietary needs. He's healthy. I am not. So he would eventually turn me on to others. You know, Kark actually recommended some great places up at Syracuse that we took advantage of. And we always listened. You know, we're like, "Hey, they thought enough to recommend some place to us. We would want to give it an honest shot." And rarely were people wrong. You know, these are tested and true places that they've been to for years. So yeah, whether we were down in, Chapel Hill, or we were in Durham or wherever, that was always our main thing, other than coming away with a win, was where in the heck are we going
to
eat?
Well, listen, I can tell you as a fat guy, whenever I go to a town for, or a city for broadcasting, those are my first thoughts. Where am I getting good food? So if you ever want any recommendations in the future, I'm happy to help.
Yeah, well, you recommended, I cannot remember where, because it wasn't Chapel Hill. It was somewhere else. And you gave us a good recommendation. And you actually told us, I'm trying to think of what it was. It wasn't somebody else. I'm mixing you up with someone who recommended really good Italian cold cuts. But you recommended something, and we ate it. And I remember texting you after and saying, bingo, you know, you were right on target. And that's when I usually texted you after the podcast. It wasn't like some controversial lacrosse take. It was always like, I can't believe we eat mushrooms.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, what's wrong with mushrooms? Or, you know, whatever it was. And I'm like,
that's like most people. I still get every time I interact with Brian Pacola, he still gives me grief for going to Jimmy John's for the tuna sub. And I stand on business. The Jimmy John's tuna is exceptional.
You know what? There are secrets like that need to be told, that need to be revealed. I'm with you.
I mean, do I prefer a deli in Long Island or the Wine Merchant in Lutherville? Yeah.
Yes.
But sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yep. Yeah, I can't tell you how many St. Paul's games I've watched from the parking lot with, you know, a Wine Merchant cold cut like dripping all over my lap.
A bomber.
Yeah.
Exceptional.
Vix, this isn't first product. This is something that we could actually put together. We could pull all of these anecdotes and restaurant recommendations together for every lacrosse town and put a book together.
You 100% could. I mean, I'm not blowing air up you. I've had plenty of other parents tell me the same thing. They're like, you know, they love the lacrosse takes. They love the honest giving back, you know, the comfortable back and forth, but it's the food. Or they like hearing about music, or Mark going off on a tangent about wrestling, for God's sakes. Or
like we could compile this. This is a summer project for sure.
There we go.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll proofread it for you.
Nice. We know a guy.
You can write the forward. Write the forward.
Yes.
There we go. All right, Richard. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, and thank you. Welcome.
Come back anytime. You can.
I appreciate it. It was an honor to appear, and I appreciate it. I'm sorry it took me so long.
Time for our game previews, and to join us, none other than Evan Washburn of CBS Sports Network. Evan and I will be working with Cooper Boardman this weekend on Westwood One Radio. So check your local channels, obviously check your satellite, Sirius XM, and we'll have everything for you from pregame to postgame and everything in between. Evan, longtime NFL sideline reporter, just covered another Super Bowl. Played lacrosse at the University of Delaware, also covers lacrosse for CBS in addition to other sports. Thanks for swinging by, man. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you as always. Pumped for a fun weekend in Charlottesville with you, and hopefully the games deliver. But we know we're going to get some good meals and some good drinks in, so that's, at the end of the day, all that really matters.
That is non-negotiable when it comes to our weekend covering men's lacrosse championship weekend. In addition to Westwood One, you can catch all these games on ESPN2. Anish, Quint, and Kark have you covered. And Evan, the first matchup, noon on ESPN2, as well as us on Westwood One. It's Duke versus Princeton. And obviously a lot's been made of the Duke season, the soft schedule, if you will, but really a win over North Carolina to close out the regular slate for the Blue Devils got them into the NCAA tournament. And what do you know? They're in the Final Four against a Princeton team that is a great collection of talent, especially on the offensive end. They're the number one seed How do you break this one down?
Well, first of all, it's just, it's a reminder with the format as it's currently constituted that just getting into the tournament is probably your greatest challenge. But once you're in, you just got to win two games and then you find yourself in championship weekend. And I agree with you, kind of going back through it this week, prepping for our games and specifically that matchup with Princeton, it was a soft schedule and they had their struggles there for a stretch, losing four in a row, but it's still a loaded roster. So the getting in portion to the tournament and then facing a Richmond team that had, for good reason, a ton of expectation and having to manage that, you saw just sort of a comfort in Duke, and you definitely saw it against Georgetown, and it kind of seems to wake up a sleeping giant, if you will. I look at this as whether or not Duke defensively can hold a Princeton offense that's extremely explosive. I don't think they're going to hold them down, but can you hold them in check? Can you make this game one that's hovering in the low teens or even, you know, a race to 12? I think that's the nature of a game that Duke wants to play. And obviously what's happened in the net to me is going to be a prime kind of focus early in this one, because you make the goalie change and it's worked out for them over the last three games. But then you bring the stage of a championship weekend to a goalie who hasn't experienced it. And we've seen in years past, and it feels like, Dixie, and you would know better than I, but it feels like Duke's been in this position before, in this game, with question marks at their goaltending position. So those are kind of my early thoughts on this one, kind of big picture.
Yeah, I agree with you. When you look at Princeton offensively, they're just so loaded. Nate Kiberi, a Tuoriton finalist, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. A lot of people felt like Chad Palumbo should have gotten that nod for the Tuoriton recognition. You have Tucker Wade in the midfield, and you're just so many offensive weapons, and they're deep. They face off well, good short stick D midi core. But really what's improved for me this year is on the defensive side of the ball, you know, Stahl leading that close group and Ryan Kroduk between the pipes. Just a really, you know, just from top to bottom, maybe the most complete and deepest team left. And then you flip it over to Duke. You mentioned Buck Cunningham getting the starting job late in the season, and he's played really well between the pipes. And Duke is a team, I think, that's played well defensively all year long. Obviously, Aiden McGuire in the short stick D-midi position, but their sturdy defense has allowed the offense to mature and take some steps this year. Max Sloat's had a great year. Ben Johnston, we knew they are moving to attack. And yeah, so I agree with you. This is going to be two programs that are familiar with championship weekend, but haven't been there in a few years. So how does that affect them? How much of a difference do you think it makes playing on a college campus, Scott Stadium, versus if they were going into an NFL venue, Foxborough or Philadelphia?
It's high on my list of questions, both from a gameplay standpoint, and then you factor in the conditions. It's supposed to be rainy, especially on Saturday, and as I understand it, natural grass field. So how that holds up could impact things, especially for, again, a team like Princeton offensively that really prides itself in the ability to move the ball. They're explosive. They get downhill. They've got some just really slick sticks, and that can, as we know, be neutralized sometimes when it's wet and sloppy. So maybe that leans towards Duke's side of things. But then there's just kind of the general picture of, hey, as you walk into Gillette or Lincoln Financial Field, there is a little bit of shock and awe for what ends up being guys that are 18 to 23 years old. Is there less of that in Joe Scott Stadium because it's a college venue, something they're probably familiar with, whether they've played in something similar at their home venues or on the road? But I do think there's just a tension that comes with this weekend. We talk about it every year, kind of out of the gate, especially that first game. There's so much build up to it. You're really realizing a dream in a lot of ways. I think that'll still exist, but it'll be different. And I'm hoping in a fun way, in a unique way, a better crowd, a more raucous atmosphere that sometimes gets neutralized by just the cavernous feel of an NFL stadium.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, I normally don't make predictions, but I will this weekend since it's our last weekend of college lacrosse. I'll roll with Princeton straight up. I just feel like they're just deeper and maybe a little bit more explosive. Will it be neutralized by weather or field conditions? Who knows? But how about yourself?
I'm with you. I was extremely impressed. I hadn't watched a ton of Princeton over the course of the season. They just weren't on TV a ton. But then doing as deep a dive as you could into what they did in the quarterfinal round and in their first round matchup, it was just it's a machine that seems to be operating at extremely high efficiency. There's a confidence, there's a swagger, but it doesn't seem to bleed into reckless play. They have an intention to what they're doing on both ends. I like that. I think Duke's dangerous. I think the way this game starts will be so critical because I'm with you. This is new territory for both teams as they're currently constituted. But I still think of John Donowski and his staff and just kind of the DNA of that program is one that is a regular contributor to championship weekend. So there's a comfort that comes with that from a scheduling standpoint, a routine standpoint. And while Princeton was here a few years ago, it still seems new for this version of the Tigers post the Bill Tierney era. So I think them getting off to a hot start is critical. But I do like Princeton in this one. And I think they get to kind of that maybe that 14 range from goals and then maybe hold Duke down to kind of that 10-12 range.
Yeah. Second semifinal beginning approximately 2:30-ish. It is the 6-seed Syracuse taking on Notre Dame. Worth noting, the Irish, the number 2 seed, worth noting 3 ACC teams in this Final Four, in this championship weekend. Princeton, of course, representing the Ivy League. I'll go first in this one. You know, I saw Syracuse in person last weekend as well as Notre Dame. I was at the quarterfinals up at Hofstra. Notre Dame is just so efficient. They're not explosive. You know, they don't wow you with any one particular area on the field, although their defense is pretty darn impressive. I really like Ricciardelli's development from last year to this. I mean, he's probably in the mix to potentially be a first-team All-American. If he's not, second, third team, you know, could be on the table for him. Sean Light in the defense. I mean, if Notre Dame wins this whole thing, does he take home the Tuariton?
Yeah.
And when you look at this, I mean, you got 3 Tuariton finalists. We mentioned Nate Kibiri. You got Sean Light. And then we got Joey Spallina for the Cuse. But I think it's possible this year of defense being so highlighted. And then offensively, they just have pieces, you know, Josh Yago and Matt Jeffrey and, you know, Will Angrick. And, you know, I didn't even mention Will Donovan at the long stick midfield position. You know, Syracuse on the other side had to beat a North Carolina team that beat them 2 straight times in the regular season this year, and they were able to win the third match there. I mean, you know, yes, there was some questionable officiating. There was a big missed call that led to Syracuse's 11th goal, but that's part of lacrosse, and you got to try to adjust, adapt. Jimmy McCool has been fantastic in this NCAA tournament. The heroics against Yale late, and then he was in the fourth quarter against Carolina was big. Billy Dwan III, who made that ridiculous play, the backhand that started the transition and got Syracuse up the field in their 11th goal. And, you know, and then offensively, you know, you talk about Spallina and Roa and Thompson, Michael Leo, you know, Wyatt Hoddle's become such an essential piece. And then at the faceoff, I think they do have an advantage with John Mullen if he can continue the way he's played in this postseason. So a really interesting matchup between folks that have already played. Notre Dame beat Syracuse a few weeks ago in South Bend. So I think this is the senior class of Syracuse restoring the glory to the Dome versus a Notre Dame team that is now removed from the Cavanaughs, removed from Entenmann, and ready to put their stamp on this program and make history of their own. So how about you?
Look, really well said. And I'm excited for this game. You know, I'm excited for both of them. But this one has, to me, more stakes attached to it for what you just brought up for Syracuse side of things. I mean, if it's going to happen, it's got to happen now with this group. And they, I think, have done an incredible job of of handling expectations, taking on the weight of, hey, are you guys going to be the group that's going to bring this group back to what the standard was for so many years? And I do think they did that in a lot of ways by getting back to championship weekend a season ago, and then obviously making it back here this year. So the question is, can you punch through, get to a championship Monday, and maybe even cut down some nets Monday afternoon? And Notre Dame, to me, it feels like as good a job as Corrigan's done, because, yeah, he's still got a ton of talented players, but it's a transitional year for the program as I view it, because of the loss of the Kavanaugh, as your leading scorer is a transfer from Air Force. You know, you're still building through the recruiting process, but outside of Sean Light and Donovan and some other players, like, it's not a group that's kind of walked this road together for so many years and then kind of comes to this crossroads of, are we going to, you know, continue to add to this Notre Dame legacy? So I think that gives them a freedom and comfort. Like, in my mind, and I had Notre Dame as a national champion, probably, I don't know, they asked me for one of our games in late April. I just think they come to it with just a depth, going back to our earlier conversation about Princeton and Duke. It's a deep team. It's not a group of no names, but I think they can just throw a lot at you. And I think they can bully you. And I think they can bully Syracuse in this game. And I think it's going to have to be one of those things where, who's playing the game on their terms? If this becomes an absolute track meet and almost like a summer pickup game, then Syracuse is playing on Monday. If they feel that physicality, that weight that Notre Dame can bring, obviously defensively for the large part of that, then I think Notre Dame's in a good spot to be playing on Monday. This game, you and I will know early in that first quarter into the second quarter, like, hey, what style of game do we have? Because it's so contrasting, in my view, that it'll be – hopefully it's close, but I do think depending on which team's playing it their way, their terms, it could get out of hand.
And I tell you, I think it's important. I don't know how you feel about it, but Syracuse being there last year.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge advantage to the Orange, and also the way that game against Maryland went down. You know, they really got beat up by the Terps. And I think it's been mentioned in their post game as well as this week that it was a new experience for Syracuse, which is really weird to put those phrases together. A program that went to 22 consecutive national semifinals. But I think that experience will help Syracuse. How much of a part do you think that weighs into the equation?
It's a great observation, great point. And I mean, again, you've had them this year. You said you've seen them in person the last 2 weeks. It feels like, and let's be specific with the matchup, for example, mm-hmm. Joyce Polina is better prepared to handle the weight of a matchup with a guy like Sean Light this year than maybe he was with Schaller a year ago. And how much he just kind of got neutralized and in a lot of ways taken out of that game with the way Schaller is able to play you. And Sean Light, for my money, is a former defenseman, a guy who just obsesses over that position and the way guys play it. Those are two of the best, in my opinion. Like, they're just walking teach tape on how to do it. But again, it seems like, you know, if you use the first matchup as any indicator, like, he's still able to be productive despite having Light all over him and now have to do it in the biggest game of the season. And that for me is going to be probably worth the price of admission right there. Like, I can't wait to see how that one goes. It's like a boxing / chess match all game long.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I'll go with Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. You're going picks Notre Dame. Okay. I'm with you. I hope it's tight. I hope it has some swings and momentum, but I just like the way, kind of the demeanor Notre Dame's been bringing recently too. It's kind of, I mean, it's always business with that group, but it feels, maybe without the flair of the Kavanaughs, it feels even more kind of like straight line. We have an intention and we're going to meet it.
Yeah. Terrific. Evan, man, it's always great to catch up with you. I'm looking forward to spending some time with you this weekend, a lot of time actually, and you got a special guest accompanying you to the championship weekend.
As you know, my diva status continues to grow, so I need personal assistance to manage all of just the really the fans that are constantly inundating me over the course of 4 days. So my son Hudson will be there to act as security and body man. But no, more importantly, just excited for him to experience what I think what makes this weekend so great. I mean, if you are involved, interested in the sport, like you got to be here for this. And you touched on it earlier. We're back in a college venue for the first time. And I guess, what was it? The Connecticut setup.
Rensselaer Field a couple of years ago. It really wasn't a college campus even.
Yeah. That doesn't feel like a college. No. It's not a college thing, but like this is, I'm hoping this has shades of Rutgers for some folks. For me, it was Bird growing up. Like this is, and you know, you get to spend a weekend in Charlottesville. So yeah, we're excited. Can't wait to hang with you and Cooper and the boys. And, hopefully get some good games out of this as well. And a little, I'd appreciate it not be a full-on 2003 downpour as the guy who's going to be living on the sideline for most of this.
Well, no lightning delays either, like 22. It was a six-hour weather delay. Well, two things before we exit. One, I think it's important to note, not only is he Hudson Washburn, who runs the Washburn household, but he's also now a HOCO Club League champion.
Yeah, there's good. If his ego can walk through the door after winning the 2034's Elite Division HOCO champs and bringing some hardware back to the Crabs after it'd been a 4-year drought for the brand. So no, it was exciting. It's been a great run, and I do think that when you get to see these guys up front and in person, whether you're on that sideline or in the stands, it's a reminder of, you might be feeling good about yourself right now, but you got a long way to go, buddy, to be able to play at this level.
But yeah, so some of my fondest memories, lacrosse memories, are with my boys as well, attending championship weekends. Dad was always working, but they would come up, be in the stands. Some of the, you know, growing up, my son Owen was a huge Denver fan, so he went to breakfast with them, and post game was able to hang out with them a little bit. And I remember Matt grew up a big Duke fan, and after Duke won one of their titles, was able to spend some time with those guys before they headed out of Philadelphia 1 year. So, and then just everything in between, being in the stands and watching the games, it's good stuff, man. It only enhances our love for the game, and
Do they still do the, I mean, for us, it was the guys that would lose would throw their sticks into the stands. I haven't paid attention in the last few years, but I know that was like almost worth the price of admission for a kid. My one buddy got Jay Jalbert's stick because they wanted, that thing was like, that was a high priced piece of, it was like a trophy at the house when you'd go to, there's Jay Jalbert's stick.
I know my boys walked away with some Duke helmets.
Oh.
and then my son Owen got Westberg's shoulder pads.
Man, all right. So it's gotten even better. If we're getting helmets. But
this was like them handing it over. I mean, our sons have a little bit more access than some other kids, right.
Tell that to Hudson, but if he's pleasantly surprised with some Notre Dame, Princeton, Duke or Cuse gear.
There you go.
We won't fight it off.
It's good stuff. Well, Evan, thanks again for joining us. I'll see you in a few hours.
Sounds like a plan, man. Safe travels.
And that seems like a good place to stop. A reminder that the Deep Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Special thanks to this week's guests, Rich Chismar and Evan Washburn. And a special thanks to Dixie for picking up the pod when I had to step out today and doing the preview with Evan. Do us a favor. Please tell a friend. Share the love. It's free and it helps other people get to know this podcast. We always love to hear from you, so please feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. That's dflyanddixie. And if you've made it this far, you are a true friend of this podcast. Dixie and I thank you and appreciate you. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.